The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is William Weichel, and tonight's special guest, as you know, is Michael Tesserian. And if there is anyone who knows what's up with humanity and the world, it is definitely him. But first, we'd like to thank our sponsors, and thanks to all of our sponsors and all those who have donated to Sovereign Minds, a cause of waking up to people, or as I say, waking up to sheep. We're talking about advanced soil stabilization using Technisoil for dust control on roads, driveways, and parking lots. Also installing Crestone driveways. Call Todd Sykes for more information at 530-549-4801. I'll repeat that again, 530-549-4801. Advanced soil is green friendly and it eliminates dust. Okay, so also we have out there
TeamQuest.
Go for it, Nate.
We have Carlos Zapata. He's the owner and operator of Black Belt down there. You can be reached at 646-7346. It's good for anybody from they have the kids, and you can get up. It doesn't matter how old you are. If you just want to get into shape, go down, see Carlos. Got great deals and a great atmosphere. So check them out.
Yeah, definitely. Knowing martial arts and how to take care of yourself builds confidence and a really good personality. I myself have been studying for about 40 years, and I agree with exactly what Nate's there. Now, usually we have news says, but we're just going to pass that right up. And with that said, let's get on with the show and my friend Michael Tesserian, who is somewhere in Europe right now. And if you haven't checked out his websites, then it's something you really need to do. He's a lecturer, philosopher, teacher, and more. That's just to say at the least. His websites is Terroscopes, MichaelTesserian.com, things that he talks about, origins and oracles, exploring ancient mysteries and forbidden knowledge, architects of control. This is Mass Control and the Future of Mankind, Unslaved, the Disciples of Mysterium, Irish Origins, Astrotheology, and more. I mean, I've listened to this man talk in his lectures, and he really has it on the ball. He knows what's going on. Michael, it's truly a pleasure to have you on the show tonight. Without a doubt, I know right now everybody in the North State's got their ears pressed to the radios. Michael, you there?
Yes, I am. It's nice to be on. Thank you so much for the invitation. It's great to be on your show.
Yeah, definitely. You know, Michael, I've seen and studied almost everything that you've done, right back to Alan Watts, and it's very interesting how you've been able to look right through what is happening and what is happening in the world today and with society and people. You have consistently helped thousands of individuals really see past the matrix deceptions and lies that have been perpetrated not only by the American people, on the American people, but by the world as well. What do you...
Yes, indeed. I mean, it was an accident. It wasn't planned, you know, so...
Really?
I'm very proud to have people pay attention to the research.
Mm-hmm.
It's really wonderful.
What do you see happening right now in Europe, in the Middle East and everything? I feel it's truly... This is throwing a monkey wrench in, like, what's happening with Israel and all the democratic societies, because everybody seems to be wanting democracy now.
Well, exactly. I think that people are getting inwardly very tired of the cage.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, I'm not just talking about the physical cage, but the mental and emotional cages, the conditioning,
mm-hmm.
The stress that people have just from trying to eke out a daily existence where they have been promised all sorts of utopian paradises for, you know, at least 30 years, and of course we know for longer than that. But certainly in the last 30 years, there's been so much talk of world brotherhood and global diversity and plenty and all sorts of prosperity and end of pollution and end of inequality and all the talismanic terms that we've heard, as I say, in the last 30 years since the 70s. And, of course, we're not seeing it. Yes, okay, people can argue that the wall came down and that South Africa got its freedom. And so it's not that time stands still. There has been very positive developments. I mean, even in my own country in Northern Ireland, on one hand, you have to say, well, yes, technically speaking, the violence is over, the killing has stopped, the barricades are down, and, you know, people have what you might want to call freedom. Mm-hmm. But then on the other hand, we also know that that's not necessarily true, because just because there may not be physical coercion, it doesn't mean that the kind of psychological coercion, which is ubiquitous all around us, the control of the habitat, the control of the mind, that hasn't really abated at all.
No, I agree
and
with
I think
you.
That there's an instinct in each individual to try and have that kind of freedom, even though it's very threatening as well. So what we're seeing is sort of baby steps. In my way of looking at the movement of history, I am pretty positive about what's going on because I think that we're taking those baby steps towards total, absolute psychological freedom, which is the highest kind of freedom. The political and social freedoms are merely one small stage along the way to a greater kind of freedom.
Hey, Michael, this is Nate, the other co-host. I was watching a lot of your recent interviews and past interviews. Since you're on the individual, I'd like to kind of ask you to elaborate for our guests and our listeners. What you once said, why can people not accept that they're their own saviors?
Mm-hmm.
And why would they have a problem with that? Like if they think, oh man, that's blasphemy even to think. It was just really, really interesting and I'd like you to maybe talk about that.
That's a great question. And, of course, it is blasphemy, and yet it shouldn't be, because even church fathers, some of them extremely elevated patriarchs of the church, great scholars of the church, and in the Bible itself, you have references to that man is the kingdom of God, what Jesus' words, what I can do, you can do also and more.
Mm-hmm.
And various references, and then, of course, all the stuff that they left out of the official text. The Gnostic Gospels, the theme there is also quite strong about man taking responsibility for his own life. If even a Christian was to argue that the backdrop of Christianity was Judaism, well, they still would have trouble there because the Jewish concept is that man must live a pure moral life here and now and not believe in any sort of supernatural saviors. He can believe in one if he feels like it, but that's not going to do him any good after he's dead. The whole Judaic pure concept is that man must take responsibility for his existence and his good deeds here and now. So even the earliest roots of Christianity, I don't care whether you call them Gnostic, whether you call them pagan, or whether you call them Judaic, Jewish, then you still have this motif. So it is replete. And that's why people have resistance today. When you talk about self awareness, the greatest sentences, the greatest words of philosophy ever written, were only two words, know thyself.
Mm-hmm.
They are the root of all philosophy, of all mysticism, of all yoga, of all science, of all existence. And so why then would people, and I think I addressed this in various DVDs like Architects of Control,
mm-hmm.
I'm interested in to find out what it is that people have difficulty accepting that. And of course, on one level, it means walking the Siddhartha road, which is very difficult. It's painful. And people don't want that legitimate suffering. They'd rather have the pseudo-suffering of a pseudo-world, a pseudo-relationships, pseudo-love, and pseudo-civilization. They'd rather have that than walk the road of true inner awareness where you have to take personal responsibility and not say it's a shared responsibility or a collectivized responsibility. And therefore we have this then ancient conflict between the many, the collective, and the individual. And it doesn't matter if you're in some sort of native tribe or anywhere on earth or at any time in existence, any time in history. This conflict between the many and the one is there. People have these idealistic images of various primitive tribes and what have you, and they all think that these people were idyllic. No, even in those situations, you have the shaman who is the one, the individual, the thinker, the one who went within, and then you have the bickering horde, the violent, bickering, externalized horde. And so that's no different. So even though there's been technological change in our world, and by the way, that's kind of recent as well if you really think about it.
Yeah.
But you do have this sort of scientific, technical advance, and I'm not bashing it. I think it's fantastic. Shows us the capability, the possibility of what man can do with his rational mind. But unfortunately, and you know, my work is to show the reasons for this, is that psychologically we've remained very, very primitive. And the reasons for that have to do with ancient trauma, number one, things that happened in the ancient past, which of course were not taught in the schools, for a very good reason, because that trauma actually plays into the very hands of the controllers. They manipulate it and use the fact that the mind has been, sort of schizoid, if you want to use that word.
Mm-hmm.
And then our civilization becomes schizogenic. Everything in it produces more pathology. And this works for the benefit of the master. And so the real reason, to answer your question, why there's a resistance is because of conditioning. Actually, everybody, if you sat down and really talked to them heart to heart, they would realize that they exist. They did not create the universe. They did not create their own mind. They did not create themselves, and that existence is a miracle, and they're here to experience that to a very deep level. I think that all people would accept that. People go through meditation like that when, say, somebody in their family dies, or a parent passes away, or they've seen their brothers die in wars, or what have you. There is this philosophical core to all human beings. But what happens is when we get caught up in the stimuli, and when we get trying to compare each person, and you're in with the peers, and you want to appear to be trendy and modern and what have you, and better than the Joneses, and you got to get that promotion at work, and you have to eke out that existence to get all those material perks, one loses themselves. You see, in the matrix, into this whole illusion of the pseudo world. But in the core of a person, they will accept it. But the reason why they're not doing it is mostly because it's not done in the collective. And the conditioning of schools and parents and priests and teachers, all these false models of authority, they're not doing it. They don't bring us up as children to think of ourselves as individuals, to have any sense of inner directedness, to have models of previous shaman and previous leaders, teachers, mystics, etc. So if I look at my life and compare my life, say, to a lot of other people, it's because I was brought up, like you said earlier in the introduction, reading Alan Watts, reading Krishnamurti, being tied into the mystical tradition of the world and so on. That's missing from the lives of a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Whose big turn-on in the day is, going shopping or something in the mall or whatever. Or, like I say, getting that promotion and getting that new car. So their world has become completely externalized. And so if you come along then and talk about the meaning of existence to these people and taking responsibility, they don't even have the faintest idea what you're talking about. When they need a priest, they'll just go and get one, just like you need a dentist or a facelift or a makeover. If suddenly tomorrow you feel a bit empty, and let's just dial up a psychologist or a psychiatrist, or maybe head down and find one of these authority figures who will try and give you some guff about the meaning of life and what have you. You just call one up when you need it, just like any prostitute. You don't need to be looking inside yourself. That's too much work.
Yeah, Michael, that's very true. And the people that I worked with and everything, people are lost. And they don't know how to really find themselves until they understand that this matrix hasn't been created for them. I mean, it isn't just this generation. It's past generations, grandfathers, grandmothers, our parents. We've been guided through religions and through governmental factors right into this point where we are right now. But I believe that we've all evolved to a point, actually I believe spiritually, mentally, genetically, and everything else, where the forms of government and religions that we have in the mainstream right now cannot cope with the realities of this change that's taken place.
Well, I don't think they can, and I think that they're at a very bad place. What you said just a minute ago is very important. People must be very, very cognizant. People who are thinking of, how to even deepen their knowledge of what's going on have to bear in mind history. They have to. It's not negotiable. They have to understand that everything that they're looking at today has been the product of a very, very slow, gradual movement. That's why people have difficulty with my work, because it takes them back. It takes them back to Atlantis. It takes them back to the ancient, ancient times,
mm-hmm.
to show them how long ago the roots of tyranny go. They're not just, from the birth of the America. They're not just from the rise of the British Empire. They're not just from the time of the rise of the Nile in the Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
Need to control, this need for world ownership or what have you. The mentality that sees man just as a slave to be controlled and pushed around is very, very ancient.
Mm-hmm.
However, for every evil that exists in the world, and you and I, William, have talked about this before, every thing that we could put our finger on that is evil has within it the roots of its own destruction.
Definitely.
It simply is not sustainable because it's an obscenity to nature. It's obscenity to that noumena, you can, you know, call it God, you can call it spirit, you can call it Geist, you can call it whatever you want. But that eternal knowledge, that eternal wisdom that is the universe, that is so infinitely older than us, that is going to be here infinitely longer than when we depart, at least from this particular form or frequency of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And that, again, fundamentally to be understood, we did not make it. So it doesn't matter what the materialist atheist has discovered. Let them discover it. They're making some interesting finds. Great, no problem. Right over here, some other guy is completely materialistic. They're not going to get that. That's all right. That's a state of avidya or ignorance. Because the human being who doesn't understand that they exist in a plasma of other intelligence,
mm-hmm.
the intelligence of the rocks, the intelligence of the stars, the intelligence of the air, the intelligence of the water, you did not make that, but there it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not doing something. You know, the clouds that pass in the sky are not particularly doing anything, but they are operating. The trees that grow, the rain that falls. We are the doers. Nature is the beer. It just is. We have lost this isness. We've lost this sense of being,
mm-hmm.
and we're running around in the doing world, and it's important to do, but to this extreme extent where we've completely lost the thread of who we actually are, and then when we need to find that out, we turn to the mirrors of other people. You tell me who I am. I'm male because you're female. I'm black because you're white, or I'm white because you're black, and I'm intelligent because you're an idiot. You know, we're all in this world of comparison, and that's who we are. That's what's known as the subjective self, the subjective being.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in a state of total forgetfulness of self. And then this governmental matrix that you're talking about depends entirely on that frequency. The man who steps out, or even the community that steps out, or the world that steps out, or the country that steps out, and there's no doubt about it that birth will be very, very painful.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like all births can be, certain births can be very traumatic. Well, that's what I'm seeing now. So, you know, to emphasize what you're saying, I absolutely agree with it, is that we are now going through an epochal change, a tremendous birth, a painful one, but it's a historical one. And it's one that says we're not so interested now in this kind of subjectivity, pseudo-subjectivity, pseudo-persona, pseudo-selfhood that we've occupied before. And that's why my work is to encourage people to continue in that process, not necessarily run around and try and tinker around in the political sphere, because I don't think that's going to work.
No, I don't think so
either. It's an internal move, an internal shift of consciousness. And if that can continue to happen, and if people can not get afraid of the fear, you know, if they can deal with the fear, deal with that anxiety that rises up as you make this transformation, then there is no doubt about it in my mind that what you're saying is right, and that their hold on their control will simply lessen and lessen and lessen until basically there is a great change.
Yeah, I see them right now and kind of cooking up the burner, turning everything on high speed, because they're still trying to control the minds. And by controlling our mind, they control everything else, of course, as you know, we've talked about that. And one of the things that I see with this Middle East, things are going, I really don't see this as a crisis. I see this as birth pains, because the planet of the future is going to be way different than we see it or experience right now. And mankind has been trained to see things the way we are. Like you were saying, and we've talked before, people don't know how to just be anymore. They've been trained to do what they are now. And when they step away from that matrix and really start to understand what the heart and where the mind and the soul, the spirit is, and what it's looking at as reality is way different than what we're dealing with.
And I also think that people are losing touch with themselves and humanity. And I think...
As a whole.
Just as a whole. I mean, obviously in the recent future, but... It kind of ties into everything. Let's go back to Egypt. And, you know, remember they believed in many gods. And so they would call the moon god and everything. So were they closer to reality, possibly,
Good
than
question.
We're getting now?
Oh, I think so. Mm-hmm. I think that anyone who lives close to the land, who has to observe the seasons, their whole concept of what it meant to be God is very, very different than anything we could possibly understand today.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can come at it at a Jungian aspect and talk about archetypes. You can talk about personification. There's so many ways to look at it, but the most important thing to remember is that the ancient, again, let's not, like I said earlier, it's not everybody, mm-hmm. but that core group of wise ones that definitely existed in the Nile and in other places as well, like the Indus Valley and in Scandinavia and also in Ireland and Americas, that higher level human being, morally superior beings, they were very much closer to nature, and they used nature as a metaphor to teach. They used the zodiac to teach. They used the movement of the sun to teach. Not absolutely. They were people who were very close to the truth because they did not just understand that human consciousness is the only kind of consciousness that exists. They were in touch with the animals. They were in touch with that whole world of symbolism. And they were in touch with the elements. And we have lost that today with our technology. We don't even live in reality. We live in a hyper-reality. Mm-hmm. That's the technical term for it. A simulacra, two or three times removed. In fact, this conversation could be used as an example of that. I'm not sitting face-to-face with you guys. That's one step removed from reality as it would be on the for the Plains Indians or for the, you know, the Druid sitting in Ireland.
Definitely.
So we're, just by using a technological gadget, we're already one step removed from reality. Now, the listener might be listening to this interview, say, 6 months, 1 year, 10 years from now. That's two times removed. He has, in his imagination, it's a live thing that's happening now, just like when you're watching TV and you see all these people there on that screen. Well, wait a minute, that could have been filmed, you know, that's Betty Davis, hey, that's, you know, 1940 or whatever. That's not happening right now. So, again, step out of reality. And this happening once or twice is novel, it's interesting, it's a fascinating aspect of life. But once it happens repeatedly every day, like our world is now a ubiquitous hyper-reality.
Oh, yeah.
You actually start to lose yourself into the maze of unreality and into the simulacra, so you start losing your selfhood. You're even further removed from who am I in this? My I, or my sense of me-ness, is actually some sort of electronic understanding or a social contrivance, like I said, the subjective self. Now, you can better believe that back in the ancient days, like you just mentioned, that did not exist, at least. Now, that doesn't mean there wasn't deranged people.
True.
But they were so far and few between. Most people were, you know, just couldn't even afford to be insane. You had to, you know, eke out a living. You had to know the elements. You had to know the weather. So sanity would have been so much, you know, greater in the ancient days. It's just like physical disease. This is a fact. It's absolutely an absolute fact that various forms of disease, cancer and what have you, are, you know, creations of the city. They're creations of civilization.
Oh,
they
yeah.
didn't exist in previous times. And it's the same thing with mental disease. It's absolutely a phenomenon of what we call civilization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people are so lost out there right now, they don't know who, what, or where they are. I mean, it's very obvious you can see people. But we've been, this is what those that are trying to have control over everybody is doing. They're creating a picture, a facade for us to follow. And I found out, being the shaman and working with cancer patients and helping mental pain, you know, I worked with people of all walks of life all over the world, and I found out that it usually takes a massive shock. And I think that's kind of what's happening. What I mean by shock, a death in the family, something that almost kills them, or something where they lose a loved one, you know, maybe a breakup or something. And it takes something like that before people really starting to look at themselves and what's going on in the world right now. We got about a minute left before we have to go on to break, Mike. What can you touch on that for people?
Well, we have a question actually from the chat room. Yeah, maybe you can think about and something we can just leave everybody with, and then you can answer it when we get back. We have a question here that says, "What can we do about it?"
Yeah.
You know, how can we we define the problem, but what can we do? And
well, that's a great one. Yeah, we'll talk about that when we get back. That's a great one.
Okay. And great. We'll get back.
Okay, we're going to go on to break now, ladies and gentlemen. We'll talk to you in a minute with Michael Cesarian. We call upon women. We call upon children. We call upon the handicapped.
"Are you the guy on the radio commercials for Coachmaster?" I replied, "I was." "We want to comment about the woman who had her own way of explaining the problem with her car. You know, she heard a scream-like noise, then felt a kaplunk, and then the warble started. We use the same words for our husbands, and they poke fun at us, like we don't know anything about cars. We all laughed about that, and they continued. This proves that women may not use the same words as a man, but our explanations are just as valid. It appears the ladies are responsible for adding to the lexicon of car language, because since that commercial ran, several people have come to the shop asking if we could fix the warble in their cars. Coachmaster, Collision Repair, Redding, California."
This Chamber of Commerce Minute is brought to you by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning.
When Chamber members tell us why they belong to the Chamber, they say things like, "The Chamber helps me grow my business. Chamber's like my own private marketing department, helping me find customers. They keep me in touch with other member businesses that may turn out to be vendors from whom I can find high-quality product. Some of them even become customers of my own. Chamber provides these opportunities through our publications, events, seminars, literature distribution, and other programs. The mission of the Chamber is to stimulate a business climate in which our members grow their businesses. If you're a business owner in the Redding area, call us today at 225-4433 or visit our website at reddingchamber.com for more information on how we can partner with you and your company's success.
This moment's been brought to you by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, professional cleaning services, 221-5868. Why not get the best?
KCNR, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media.
Okay, this is William Micro, and we're back with Sovereign Minds, and Michael Sarian here. I like the little song there, "Together We Rise," and that's how I see it. And that's what's happening in the world today. But we had posed a question for Mike, Michael here, and go ahead, Michael. Are you still there, Mike?
Oh, yes. Hello, yeah.
Okay, we could, if you want to, go ahead and you could...
We had a question. We said we can define the problem, but what can we do about it to maybe reconnect with our spiritual side?
Your average person.
Well, you don't have to go further than the question itself.
Yes.
My advice is to get rid of the we.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you're in we consciousness, nothing will change. I mean, and I'm not making that up.
No, you're not.
Look around and prove it for yourself. It's a self-fulfilling equation. When the word we is no longer in the vocabulary of the human race, then you will have the kind of change I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You can have we-ness when you're going shopping and what's known as the mercurial domestic minutiae, the back and forth, and all non-psychological, non-philosophical spheres of existence. Sure, there's a sort of collaborativeness, there's a domesticity, collectivity with a small c. Control is all about collectivity.
Mm-hmm.
And collectivity, like anything, like any meal that you eat, has ingredients. And I don't know why it's taken so long for the human race to start working out what are the ingredients of the lie, what are the ingredients of the matrix of control. And one of the ingredients, there's many, is we-ness, an overt collectivity psychologically. An overt philosophical lack of self, you know, again, it's like what we were saying earlier, it's just a lack of selfhood.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to solving the bigger problems of consciousness and what's going on in the world, and as you mentioned earlier, the government and all of that is just a manifestation of consciousness, then the we is to be thrown out. I mean, that's just to be left at the door, period. You're not even on the right boat. You're not even on the right bus. You bought the wrong ticket. You're not even in the right sphere at all.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you will still be contaminated by some of the lie. And you might then, in that state of contamination or unsanity, as I always define it, in an enslaved point of view, be rushing around like with your hair on fire, trying to solve things, which is what most people are actually doing.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. There, people are into the weed. They're not looking into themselves and what they need to do as an individual. And I think that's the hardest part, because a lot of people out there, they are into their job, watching the TV. You know, we have the medias, we have the games. There are so many things out there that I believe that has been put in front of us to keep us distracted, because they know the power that the individual can have once they start understanding who and what they really are.
That seems like the same battle, collectivism versus individuality. And anybody that says we need a law for this and we need a law for that, and those are the people that need other people and are dependent upon other people. And I think that's what society is pushing on people at the youngest age they can. They want them in preschool. They want to break the family up so they can teach them collectivism
for the next generation
and make sure they're all dependent on the system. And then they'll, yeah, so then they control them that way 100%. So.
And then manufacture a bunch of pseudo-individualism,
yes.
Which is the kind of rubbish that we have today and have had for hundreds of years, under the guise of me, myself, and I, the sort of ego,
mm-hmm.
And these models, and then this whole cult of individualism, the false kind. They'll smuggle all this other overt collectivism in. This is what was warned. America was warned about this with philosophers like Ayn Rand and many others, Nathaniel Brandon and what have you, and many others as well, Alan Watts included.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all right, as I said, for communities to exist. But when you are stepping into what I refer to as the occult world, and the occult world is simply the world of philosophy, the world of psychology, the world of meaning, what is it all going on? What am I here for? You know, I opened my DVD film, Architects of Control, with that. Why am I here? Where am I going? You know, what's my purpose? The very important age-old questions that come in when you're born. Every individual child will come in with those questions. They may choose not to ask them, but if they ask them, and they really do ask them with any kind of feeling, then they're automatically in this other world, the sacred world. They've already moved over
mm-hmm.
from the world of as is into the world of the holy place. And therefore, some of the trappings that we use then, that we don when we are interacting with other people, are just simply of no use. But we're not told that by the authority figures,
true.
You know, the official religion, the official teachers, and so on. We're not told that. We're put into a classroom. In my country, to wear a uniform. You know, there was a complete uniformity of everything, including of consciousness, and that was to erase any concept. And that's because there are actually people on this planet who will always be collectivized. It's their world we're living in. It's their forensic filth that we're living in, because they have no sense of individuality.
True.
And through their fraternity systems and schools and everything else, you know, so they're irredeemable. I mean, they're never going to, they loathe, because they're so toxic, the last thing they could ever want
mm-hmm.
is for a culture to be, you know, centered on the individual again. They're of a hive mentality, and therefore they smuggle under the talismanic words of brotherhood of man and community and humanity and all these talismanic words. They smuggle under that pseudo-individuality all their own vile, you know, creations.
Mm-hmm. Very true. I've noticed that, and I've seen that in all the works that I've done. You know, one thing that I've really noticed in the world today is, without the religion, it seems that the religion of today is dying away, and everybody seems to be heading more into what you are talking about right here, and the understanding of the self. And I think that is really what's creating this change taking place in the Middle East. It isn't the U.S., it isn't anything, it's a, for lack of a better word, a global consciousness, a global soul that's awakening among everybody. And I believe that these governments and stuff we have nowadays are going to fall by the wayside, and a totally new existence has come up. What do you think about the tribal and the clan aspects of life? Would that be better for society than the one we have now?
It's hard to say. It'll probably be a mixture.
Mm-hmm.
Again, once you center the focus on the individual, then it becomes a complexion of that individual's interests. And if one individual does want to, his interests lead him to studying things in the way that ancients did it, so be it. But what I'm talking about can be done in any sphere of life at all, because it's mostly attitude. What I'm talking
yes.
about amounts to nothing more than a change in a way of seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And that change of way of seeing can be done even within a sort of, to use, you know, in parentheses, a capitalistic, modern, progressive society. I think that the core of, the New Age movement attempted this. Of course, it got subverted again because of that overt collectivism that crept in. But in the core of religion, in the core of even the New Age movement, there was that original movement towards a man, you know, sort of asking the bigger question. It just gets contaminated. So, yes, it would be... I can't make any A to Z statement about that, because the moment that you put the focus on the individual, then it's up to that person to find out what works for them.
That's right.
And that can be where the freedom is. Mm-hmm. You know, and of course that might be, yeah, a return to their own native roots or whatever, or a return to their racial ancestry and what have you. But it doesn't necessarily really even need to be that. It's predicated on the individual, somebody from a philosophical background, you know, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we see this change. When this change takes place, it can be doctors, it can be lawyers, it can be housewives, it can be mechanics, it can be anyone. And again, we must always remember that just because we have this idyllic vision of people living close to the land, that doesn't mean that those people were any less barbarous than we are today. So human violence, human atrocity goes back, you know, to the dawn of time. I mean, you know, Genghis Khan, whoever it was, wanted to wipe out the whole of Asia just to graze sheep. So, I mean, it's not the unbelievable genocidal mania is not something that we just find today. It's been there from the dawn of time.
Yeah.
So it's all about the individual doing his holy work, and that is what really transforms the planet. The philosopher, for instance, Hegel, the German philosopher Hegel, said in philosophical terms what you have just said a few minutes ago, that we're moving towards an absolute state of freedom,
mm-hmm.
and a perfect state. Now, of course, he was grossly misinterpreted. They thought he was talking about a totalitarian state. He was speaking of nothing of the kind. He said that when man ends his master-slave relationship, when one man realizes that he is the personification of God, then it would never dawn on him to hurt another person.
Wow.
And when man evolves, all men evolve to the point where they realize that each of them are a cell within the greater body of the God force, the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically a manifestation of spirit on earth. Then it would never arise in them to want to enslave anybody else or put another man above them so that they're enslaved.
Mm-hmm.
That just will cease to exist. And when that point comes in history, and he did actually say it was going to be a period, that history will move towards this place, where just all of these lies, you've been saying it umpteen times now in this interview, in this talk, that the time will come when all of these other modes of existence are simply worthless. Their currency, it becomes worthless. They
Yes.
become so devalued that people call for another way of being.
Mm-hmm.
And that being is centered in themselves. When they understand their own preciousness, when they understand the miracle of their own existence, it will never then dawn on a person to, you know, want to throw another person's reality into the shade. And that was Hegel's perfect state, when all men can live together
mm-hmm.
in a very functional state and have that quote-unquote equality. But it's an equality of morality. It's an equality not enforced by Big Brother, who's going to tell one group that they're equal to another group and what all this nonsense. It's an absolutely
yeah.
organic awareness that we are all cells within the greater universal
yes.
intelligence.
Yeah.
And his word for that intelligence was reason. He believed that the human reason is literally the manifestation of that spirit. And of course, that's arguable. But just in general, I would say that, you know, his teachings there were about that, yep, we're all evolving towards this place where all these previous modes of existence are found to be ultimately unsustainable. And then they have to be replaced with something greater. And this was the core of his famous dialectic, again, highly misinterpreted, of course.
Mm-hmm.
People have given all sorts of ridiculous meanings to his famous dialectic. I mean, in the hands of evil men, yeah, it becomes something evil.
Yeah.
But his original idea was that just there's a natural, organic process that happens within the mind, that happens within the world, that happens within nature,
mm-hmm.
of perfection, of evolution. And that evolution is ultimately towards a greater sense of harmony with the universe and with also fellow human beings.
Mm-hmm. It's that oneness, that understanding that oneness. And this, what we're talking about here, is going into understanding what balance is within our life once we see past this matrix of deceptions and lies.
Also, let's see. I'm sure you know Freud, and he gets into the ego. So what you're saying is we're basically living almost 100% on ego.
Yeah.
And we've forgotten our spirituality. And have your studies brought you to the stories of how we had some kind of big event happen where we had to switch from our spirituality to our ego for survival? I don't know if you've ever heard that story, mm-hmm. Michael?
No, that's not familiar.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if it was Freud that said that, but there was some event uh-huh. that made us switch to total ego instead. And so,
oh, I know what you're talking about. That's Julian James.
Julian James, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, it's there, and many psychologists are toying with that idea. It's very central to my work. I think I briefly mentioned it earlier that there has been historical traumatic events that have taken place, earth
yes.
changes and what have you, many, many events, that then did actually literally brought about the kind of consciousness that we have today.
Yes.
Basically can be seen as a wound. It's like any trauma that hits you, like a car wreck or, you know, a big earthquake or something.
Mm-hmm.
You can see metaphors in daily life where a person's traumatized by some, you know, crazy thing that happened to them. Or even if you try to slip on a banana peel, the whole of your body, you know, goes into, becomes spastic. So this act of trauma happened on a global scale, perhaps not even once, but many times.
Yeah, I believe many
times. And it brought what we call the ego into existence. So we're healing from this wound, and that's the way I try to use that metaphor. When you look into all the myths of the world, they all talk about a great cataclysm and a great catastrophe that changed man, changed his body as well,
mm-hmm.
changed his aging process, changed the way he ate food, changed the fact that he needed to galvanize into these kind of unsustainable communities, that he had to become a territorial creature, that he had to create inequalities and what have you. So if you can actually see it, I mean, it's right there. It's right there in the legends. It's right there in the ancient history of how man tried to survive when he was his consciousness was traumatized. So you have a lot of people talking about the physical trauma, but they don't often speak about what it did psychologically to us.
Right.
And also they don't really emphasize how recent this was. This trauma was just a heartbeat ago. And so most human beings today are reeling still psychologically. It accounts for a lot of things that go on psychologically. But how it ties into my work is that I see that the world controllers have used that fact
mm-hmm.
to their own benefit.
I agree.
It's like anybody coming in a state of trauma, when you're weak, when you're disoriented, this is when you're vulnerable to colonization from outside.
Mm-hmm. That's why they're doing what they're doing now. They're creating more wounds, shall we say, with terrorist activity and all this, you know, mm-hmm. war and
chemtrails, poison in our food.
Exactly, everything. And they're keeping our minds distracted totally from what we need to be doing. Now, Nate, you were talking about something about legends.
Oh, no, yeah, I'd like you to get into, we have William here, he's an Irishman.
Native American.
And I got a lot of Scottish in me, and I heard you talking about the legends and how they pertain to a lot of...
What's
today,
going on today,
basically?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And this act, the physical fact of it, the physical earth changes, the trauma that took place is now known to have existed. This is a scientific fact. And it changed the land masses. It changed the location of where people existed. They had to move. I mean, this is what I'm talking about here is literally the fall of Atlantis, the fall of the ancient continents of old.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the subsequent movement of their gnosis, the knowledge that had been there, the herbal knowledge, the knowledge of the elements, the knowledge of animal behavior.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, an incredible archive stretching back far longer than we're ever taught officially had to end up certain places. And it's in Ireland and in England, you know, which was... where some of this knowledge came, it went to other places as well. That's where the Native American Indians and even the Southern American Indian groups, some of them, got this similar knowledge, this dispersion.
Yeah, yeah.
And even in the Indus Valley you have it, but a great kernel of wisdom was preserved in the aftermath in British Isles and in Scandinavia, and then from there spread out, you know, throughout the world for a period of time. And in my work on that subject, I've shown that in the mythologies of the British Isles, Scotland, Wales, England, and Ireland, in their early mythologies, when you have the what appears to be the migration to the British Isles of these highly advanced races,
mm-hmm.
actually that's been that's actually those stories have been concocted because they, those migrations did occur, but they were returns. They were returns of people who originally existed in those countries but had to leave.
I agree.
Because yeah, few places more than the Northwest were wrecked. The worst damage ever done 10,000-15,000 years ago was mm-hmm. in the British Isles and in the Arctic and in northern Scandinavia. And so those lands had to largely be vacated.
Mm-hmm. Devastation.
And once that's understood, we have a completely different understanding of history. We have now understand why you find fair-haired or red-headed people in the furthest reaches of China, in the furthest reaches of India. We understand why this is, and the controllers have done their devil best to try and just befuddle this information by talking about Aryan invasions and everything they can possibly come up with, all sorts of just complete gibberish that you find in the heads of most of these PhDs and intellectuals and historians and whatever you want to call them. And they just buy into all this rubbish.
I love it.
And can't explain, you know, how there's so much similarity, not just in the language and the etymology. I mean, they've lied and lied and lied
mm-hmm.
about the origin of Hebrew, the origin of Aramaic, the origin of the Egyptian civilization. And the moment that you come up to speak about any of this, you know, you just receive this backlashing from people who haven't the faintest idea in the world what on earth is going on. But when you really look at it deeply, you find out that there was just absolute chaos.
Yes.
You know, so this picture of cavemen and all this nonsense, everything we're brought up with, it's just utter gibberish,
bogus.
You know. It just is non, it's now becoming unsustainable in mass. I mean, my form, I can't even keep up the speed on the new discoveries, the new things that are official. They're not
very
even
true.
From fringe stuff that I'm dealing with. They're completely official accounts of this being discovered in Turkey and that being discovered in the Nile and this being discovered in over here. Megaliths. Being discovered in the Balkans, you know, with runes on them, and they're digging up corpses of red-headed women, you know, whose hair was only plaited in a way that is only found in Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
The weaving in their clothes is only found in Denmark, and they're thousands of miles away, you know, in places where we were assured, you know. Now, of course, what happens is the BBC and various official groups start to co-opt this. They keep their tabs on what the underworld is doing, what the underground fringe people are doing, and when they realize, oh my God, this information is being published now by mavericks, gee, we better get onto it and pretend all along that we were into this. So they're toying with some of these ideas now because they have to.
Yes.
Because the ordinary man, the ordinary writer, the ordinary scholar is discovering these great secrets about biblical characters, about the origin of the tribes of Israel, about the British Isles, the origin of the Druids, the Aryan invasion, you name it. All are coming out of maverick minds.
Yes.
And therefore the mainstream is realizing, just like you've been speaking about, that, look, this timber is rotten. Their whole matrix of control is just rotten.
It's falling apart.
It's crumbling by the minute. It can't be rebuilt. It's just completely desiccated. And so now they have to then pour millions in to their own little goons, their own little authors, who come out with more mainstream stuff, saying, yeah, we knew this all along, you know. Yeah, we're the guys who discovered it. And they do this on all sorts of levels, even this leaking of information about the Knights Templars, the Dan Brown,
mm-hmm.
All of this stuff, when you look at it, the Discovery Channel, History's Channel, delving into, you know, whatever, the Maya calendar, and they're co-opting like nobody's business, hoping that the 300 million people who watch the TV but have no clue that there's a whole subculture of people who have been studying this for generations.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness, look what we're discovering right now, because there it's on TV. And hopefully with all their pseudo-scholars on there, you know, these people who come in second fiddles, who they're never going to mention Emmanuel Velikovsky. They're never going to mention, you know, Commons Beaumont and all of these great, great people of the past and so many others I could mention. No, they're just going to say, you know, here I am talking about it, and that's good to go for the mainstream people. So I'm glad, for one thing, that they have these discoveries, but I'm very, very, you know, irate about the methodology, the packaging of the way that they're doing it to make themselves look good.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that I realized myself a long time ago is when they were talking about the theology of man and how he came to be, you know, from Neanderthal and everything else, and he's only been here for so many thousands of years. And then in my studies, I found out that there were mines in southern Africa that were over 100,000 years old. Now, that just blew their theory right out of the water. And you're right. They are finding new things each and every week, each month. That is new. It's just blowing our histories and our sciences of the old out of the water. We got about two more minutes left in the show here, Michael. I'd like you definitely to give out your website, any personal information you want to right there, right now, and everything, and then we can touch base on that.
Oh, well, there's a lot going on, so people are welcome to come to my forum. They can get to that by way of the michaeltesarian.com website. There's some new films coming out and a lot of new writing. And again, as I say, you know, my work is largely collaborative, so people send me stuff from all over the world. Mm-hmm. You know, we've just had this discovery of Tutankhamun's own DNA, turns out to be from the West, vindicating, you know, one of my long time thesis. Mm-hmm. Again, the Egyptian and the Irish culture, or the Western culture, were connected. You know, we have an enormous amount of new discoveries that people need to stay up to speed on, because the world is changing at a phenomenal rate. And all of this information needs to be cataloged and thought about seriously. So that's what we do. And I really have some fantastic responses to some of the work that we're putting out, you know. But also just let me say, you know, thank you for your contribution. And I'll be talking to you again about further contributions, William, you know, to the Architects of Control 2 that I'm putting together.
Oh, yeah.
Be a key part of that.
No, thank you.
I know we don't have very much time. And I just maybe hopefully just a quick question. Lucifer and the man of the light, or whatever, is it true that the Statue of Liberty is actually supposed to be Lucifer?
It's based on a goddess called Diana Lucifera.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't mean anything evil. It's just the fact that Lucifera was often attached to many goddess and gods' names, meaning keeper of the wisdom, keeper of the light.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing necessarily evil about it, unless you're coming from a strictly narrow Christian point of view.
Sure.
But then the Christians have to understand there's a difference between Satan and Lucifer. They're not the same at all.
True.
But the Freemasons, that's where it comes from. So I just thought it was kind of weird anyway.
Yeah, people go to my Irish Origins website and click through to the appendices pages, and then go to, I think it's, Trees of Life. They'll find a massive work on that, on Diana Lucifera, and
yeah,
the whole concept of that. Yeah, it's on the IrishOrigins.com website.
I was looking at that today. Very interested, ladies and gentlemen. And that's all the time we have, Michael. I'm truly happy, and it's been a pleasure to have you on the show.
And an honor.
And,
thank you.
And you really know what's going on, and I had a great time when we were filming in Santa Clara there at Conspiracy Con. And I look forward to talking to you again and possibly have you on a show in the future. And if there's anything I can personally do for you, you contact me, and we'll do that. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Michael Tesarian, one of the great minds out there. And thanks, Mike.
Oh, you're most welcome. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. And there we go.
Next week,
we have
Jim Tucker. If you guys want to know anything about the Bilderberg Group, this is the man to ask. Alex Jones goes to him. And everybody goes to his information for all his research.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's been following the Bilderberg Group for 30 years. If you don't know what the Bilderberg Group is, look it up. It has to do with all the elites running our world. They come, they meet around the world once a year. Every 4 years, they'll meet in America.
Yeah.
He's the man.
Jekyll Island. Oh, yeah. Jekyll Island. This is another thing. What Michael Tesarian was just talking about, these are the people that are trying to control our lives. And all we got to do is step away from them. We overpower them by far. And this is William Whitecrow. Here, Nate said, next week we've got Jim Tucker. I want to go over some more of our sponsors here. Advanced Soil Stabilization, using Technis Oil for dust control on roads, driveways, and parking lots. Also, they install Crestone driveways. Call Todd Sykes for more information at 530-549-4801. Advanced Soil is green-friendly and eliminates dust. And we also have Team Quest. Nate?
At first, I want to say sorry, Gary. We just saw Vermaya Swish, and he just got on chat, wanted to hear it. But anyway, Team Quest, 646-7346. Team Quest, jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai, MMA. You come in there, you get in shape. You don't have to go. They don't make you go step in the ring or anything like that. You get to learn and everything. So.
And really this good. Is William Whitecrow of Sovereign Mind saying, we're opening one mind at a time.
You are winning.